Orville Freestone Jr., Wednesday, July 29th, 2009.
Turn in your Bibles to the fourth chapter of Philippians. One of the striking things to me is that all we know about the Apostle Paul is what we read in his letters and what Luke wrote about him. And yet, whole libraries have been written about him. And his letters are such of a personal nature, though they were official letters, that we see very much about who he was, how he thought, and how he lived. In this fourth chapter of Philippians is a very familiar passage. I think that I have preached from Philippians perhaps more than any other book, and I think Brother Crook has preached from Philippians many, many times. But there is so much in there, so much that each time you go back, you see more in his letters. Reading from the 10th verse of the 4th chapter of Philippians, "But I rejoice in the Lord greatly, that now at last your care for me hath flourished again, wherein ye were also full of care, but ye lacked opportunity. But I, not that I speak in respect of want," this is a letter of thanks to the Philippians, "for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me." The one founding owner of the Denver Post and its editor for decades used to have a saying across the masthead of the paper every day: "There is no hope for the satisfied man." By which he meant, when you're satisfied, you stop striving, you stop trying to improve. Every improvement has been a result of being dissatisfied with what has been. Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin because it took so long to seed the cotton, and thereby he founded a whole industry. But there is a difference between being contented and being satisfied. A certain amount of dissatisfaction is good in that it spurs us on to improvements, but a contentment is something quite different. The Apostle Paul here said that he had learned to be content. Discontent is a disaster at times. Discontent is a cause of many evils. Discontent in a church can destroy a church. Discontent in a life can destroy a life. And yet, discontent is a common human trait. How many here can say, "I've never been discontented"? Has it ever produced anything good? Now, dissatisfaction can produce good if you set about to correct whatever you're dissatisfied about. But discontent is, well, it can be a cancer. There is a famous Greek story, a myth, you're well aware of it, of King Midas, who was a king of a kingdom in what is now Asia Minor, and how he was always discontent. He always wanted more. He had great riches, but he always wanted more, and according to the fable, he was granted the power to turn whatever he touched into gold, and he went about madly touching things to accumulate more gold, until when he kissed his daughter and she turned to gold, he saw that his discontent was not constructive. Well, of course, that's a myth, but there is a moral to it. We have a more tangible example of that in the Old Testament in the Israelites. When they came out of Egypt, they were rejoicing to be rid of slavery, rejoicing to be rid of their taskmasters, and they sang and danced on the far shore of the Red Sea, and they were rejoiced greatly. But soon they become discontented. They were marching in the desert without water, and you can imagine their situation to be in the desert without water. But then they murmured. They were discontented with their leadership, and they said, at one point, they even appointed themselves leaders to lead whoever would follow back to Egypt. And they were discontented with the manna that God miraculously provided them. And it displeased the Lord greatly, and he sent quails in such abundance that they made themselves sick over it. So discontentment is a common human trait that we all of us have to be aware of and to guard against. It is not only cause problems in a church, cause problems in our lives and in society, but it is a great cause, one of the great causes of unhappiness. Have you ever seen a discontented person who was happy? Unhappiness is the result of being discontent. It causes unhappiness in one's own life. Nothing is ever right. Everything's wrong. Poor me. And discontent with this and with that and with the other thing, things that we perhaps can't even do anything about. And it causes unhappiness for others. It causes unhappiness for other people in the home. It causes unhappiness for other people all around one who is discontent. And its sins are the sins of ingratitude. That, I think, is one of the greatest of sins, ingratitude. I think it's also one of the most common. Have you ever heard people complain to the Lord or complain about the Lord's treatment of them? Or why does this have to happen to me? That is ingratitude to the greatest degree. Because on the other hand, what all has God done for us? There is a song, Count Your Blessings, name them one by one. And to be unthankful, ingratitude, have ingratitude toward the Lord, and to reproach him after all of the blessings that he has given us is, I think, one of the greatest of sins. And ingratitude leads to envy, which is a great sin. And it is forbidden in the law, and it always brings evil. So the sin of discontent is a great sin indeed. This, against that background, think about the Apostle Paul. In all of his letters, in all of his circumstances, there is no complaint. No complaint of his circumstances. No complaint. There is regret that he expresses for his former life. There is regret that he expresses for those who were once faithful and then deserted the cause for which he was dedicated. But there is no ingratitude. There is no discontentment. And at this very time, he was sitting in a Roman prison. And Roman prisons were not like our prisons. There's a lot of complaints against our prisons. There, I saw in the paper yesterday a complaint about the prison system in Colorado. We don't allow enough time for recreation for the inmates. We don't allow opportunities for them to better themselves intellectually. We don't do this. We don't do that. Contrast that with a Roman prison. It was a cell, a small cell, in a marble or limestone building that was unheated, and there were no conveniences for the prisoners. There was no mess provided for them, no food provided for them. They had to depend on their own friends to bring food to them. The Apostle Paul sat in such a prison, and I have talked to people who have been in Rome in the wintertime, and they say that it is one of the most miserable places in the world in the winter time, especially under these kinds of circumstances, with lack of heat and so forth. And the Paul was a prisoner when he wrote this letter in Rome at the time. He also had been deserted by many of his co-workers. There were others who were taking advantage of his circumstances to destroy what he was doing. And yet, when he writes this letter to the Philippians, there is not a single complaint in there. He wrote this letter as a letter of thanksgiving to the Philippians, who had, by the hand of their pastor, had sent an offering to him to alleviate his discomfort and his misery in prison. And he said, "I rejoice in the Lord greatly," for the Philippians. And he's thanking them for their offering, that now, at the last, your care for me has flourished again. Not that you didn't care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want. He was in want, but he was not complaining about it. "For I have learned." I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I've often thought about that. Would I be content in such circumstances as that? And yet, he said he has learned to be content. He may not have been satisfied, he probably wasn't, with his surroundings, with his lot, but he was content. He learned contentment, and this is a lesson that must be learned. None of us comes, now we come by discontent naturally. That's a human trait. But none of us naturally comes about contentment. It's a lesson that has to be learned. And it consists of a quiet, restful, peaceful mind. Imagine Paul having a quiet, restful, peaceful mind, content in a Roman prison of that sort. And that too is something that we have to cultivate, a quietness of mind. We have a common human tendency to become ruffled, to get in a lather, to be upset, even about insignificant things, don't we? When all around us there are people who have more reason than we to be distressed and upset. But Paul, in the midst of all of this, rejection of many Christians, the rejection of society, awaiting trial on criminal charges of which he was innocent, he could have a quiet, restful peace of mind and thankfulness. He could be thankful for small things. And in those circumstances, any small thing would seem to be great, I would think. But thankfulness is a part of contentment. Unthankfulness is a sign of discontent. And a peace of heart, unruffled by the circumstances. Think of that. In these circumstances, in this Roman prison, where he received rough treatment and few friends around to help him, he had peace of mind, a thankful heart, and contentment. That has to be learned. And I'm sure that Paul learned that the same way we do, the hard way. You can see his impetuousness in the book of Acts before his conversion. You can see his zeal to set things straight that he felt were wrong. You can see how short-tempered he could be, and yet in Christ, he had a different disposition. He had what he called the mind of Christ. We have the mind of Christ, he wrote. And this contentment must be learned. It's not a native trait. It's a hard lesson. Paul learned this lesson. For I have learned, in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. For I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. He knew plenty, and he knew privation. He knew prosperity and privation very well. And he said, I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere And in all things I am instructed. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed. Instructed in this lesson by the circumstances of life, whether in plenty or in want, he took as a part of this lesson of learning contentment. Everywhere, in all things, whatever happened to him, he takes instruction, both to be full and to be hungry, to abound and to suffer need. And then comes what I think is the most misapplied, misquoted, most abused statement in all of Paul's writings. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Man once told me that he had earned $1 million and he's going to earn another $1 million because I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I've had it, different people tell me different things here, that I can do this or I can do that because Christ strengthens me. That's not what Paul was saying. And that was not what he meant. He said what he could do, all things that he could do. He could be abased and he could abound. He could be full and he could be hungry. He could suffer need. He could do all of these things, not in his own strength, not for the resources of his own heart, but through Christ who strengthens him. He meant that whatever the Lord allows to come into his heart, he can handle it. Whatever the Lord allows to come into his life, he can handle it through Christ who strengthened him to do so. And this was a lesson that he learned. And when he had learned that lesson, he had learned the lesson of contentment. So that is the answer to us also, to learn that whatever circumstance we find ourselves in, we can deal with it through Christ who strengthens us. And some of us have more difficult things to endure and to find contentment in. And those of us who have lesser to endure should appreciate that and honor them and pray for them. I often think of sister who's moved to Monta Vista. What's her name, Nita? Sharon. Mitchell. How she testified one day that she thanked God for her MS. Because it was through that she came to know the Lord. And over the years, through that, she had come to know him more deeply. She could do that through Christ who strengthened her. I'm sure she has her times of discouragement and downhearted, but I personally have never seen her without a smile on her face. Just to speak to her, and there was a smile there. So this is a lesson for all of us to learn, and we can learn it through Christ who strengthens us. And Paul also wrote in his letter to Timothy, in the 6th chapter, in the 6th verse, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Do you want to have great gain in life? This is the way to do it. Godliness with contentment. Do you want to have great gain in glory when this life is over? This is the way to have it, to be content with such things as we have, as Paul wrote to Timothy. So this is a lesson that is soon spoken. It is a lesson that is soon understood, but it is a lesson that is long learned. Let us be careful to apply ourselves to this lesson. Godliness with contentment is great gain, and we can do it through Christ who strengthens us. Bruce, do you have a song in closing?